Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where we give you, the investor, an inside view on some of the best and brightest small cap companies operating in the public markets today.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
Hey there, gurus. I'm here with Jay Garnett, CEO of Experian Biotech, to discuss his recent shareholder letter, the company's future, and the cannabis sector as a whole. Jay, welcome to EG's A Closer Look.
Thanks, Ethan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Jay, one of the first things I'd like to discuss is your background. In Lucas Kane, one of our writers' write-up of your letter to shareholders, he made sure to discuss the interesting backgrounds that the CEOs of some of the biggest cannabis players have had. Namaste CEO Sean Dollinger used to work at a taco stand, I believe. Bruce Linton, IT tech. But you've got a background building real businesses, consumer packaged goods, coffee. Would you be able to walk us through that and the crossover you've been able to extrapolate from taking those industries and bring them into cannabis?
Sure. So, you know, I think a lot of my history does go back to, you know, consumer packaged goods. I, in the early 90s, brought Seattle's Best Coffee to Canada. It had existed in the United States for around 25 years, but they had never formed a business plan for Canada. So, you know, I grew a business plan for them and eventually ran their entire Canadian operations and was the owner of the market for them in this market. And they eventually sold to Starbucks. And then for 4 years, I worked with Starbucks and then eventually sold to Starbucks myself in 2007. So it was about 15 years from, you know, introducing consumers, especially in the West. You know, there wasn't even more than two Starbucks at the time. There was a very different coffee market, and I don't think anybody was really thinking about buying $4 lattes or $15 a pound coffee. So we were part of definitely that wave that helped introduce specialty coffee across Canada. It would have definitely existed in other markets, but we were looking to Canadianize the experience and drive the product familiarity during that time. After that, I ran a distribution business on specialty and organic foods. Timing in the late 2000s was, 2008, 2009 was difficult just with the economy. Ran organic iced tea business called Steez in the United States. We eventually sold that on through Nestle, which was our largest partner, to a large Mexican beverage conglomerate. Then I worked with three others to form Spud, which is the organic online grocery delivery business here in Western Canada. And we've grown that to about 100 million in sales in the last 10 years. And last summer, I was really interested in, the next opportunity and was kind of, put all my experience around emerging consumer empathy and packaged goods experience. And though I was not your atypical cannabis user, I was definitely someone who understood how the mainstream consumer was going to have their barriers and how they wanted to wade into the information and knowledge around becoming, a user of cannabis, whatever that might mean for them, medical, recreational, whether that be beverage, topical, flower. So I guess I was well suited with my background to think about how, an emerging consumer business like cannabis, who had been, illegal for, a century, could then, all of a sudden overnight be in the mainstream consumer's view, and how they were going to view that and how they were going to engage with those products. There's a lot of similarities to, specialty coffee in the early 90s or organic in the early 2000s. So I definitely think my skill set is helpful, around consumer empathy. And, I've been a CEO for 26 years, so I've definitely been able to run and build some great teams. And I think that that's really what the industry needs. It needs really good people who are passionate about the product and passionate about success to, grow a brand. And I think a brand in this sector is something that will be very successful, but obviously something very difficult to obtain.
You mentioned some really big names there, of course, Nestle, Starbucks, Spud. Funny enough, we get Spud deliveries about bi-weekly. Fantastic. Not enough fresh fruit in my life until Spud came into it, so thank you for that, sir. I wanted to ask you about Experian, of course. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm very tired of, you see it a little bit less these days now that the sector has matured a little bit, but news releases and reams of fully funded capacity and X thousand square feet and, this many facilities and that many grow houses. And, you know, for so long, it was just about how much cultivation could you do? You know, it seemed like we just wanted to spread a mile wide and an inch thin. But Experion does things a little bit differently. Would you be able to tell us exactly what that is and what Experion brings to the table, in your opinion?
Sure. I think you're absolutely correct. I think that the market rewarded companies with canopy or expansion, but there was never really any talk around execution or consumer demand and how, you know, what I would call distribution. How is that product that you grow or manufacture or process actually going to get to the end consumer? There was just, you know, a lot of capacity. And while we have 400,000 square foot of growing, and that's great, but, you know, what products are you going to make with that? Are they going to be valued products? Are they going to be high quality products? Are you going to extract those products? How are you going to position them in brands to the market? Never was really, I would say, contemplated by a lot of companies. That said, there's 170 licenses out there. Sure, a lot of the big guys have figured this out or are in the process of figuring it out. But for a lot of us that are in the middle, I think that that's where the gap and the valuations, if you will, over time differ. And you know, I think first and foremost, we want to build a viable business that's profitable. That's just a simple everyday business thing. But you know, I think that cannabis is very similar to the dot-com wave in the early 2000s, where you know nobody was really worried about profit, that we'll figure that out. But I think that for any business, that is very important. And it's very important for shareholders to realize on shareholder value, you know, a profitable business. Plus, you know, when you're a leader of a business that is profitable, you can make very different decisions rather than burning money. You're always in the market and you're always trying to raise capital, and you're only as good as your last deal. So, you know, Experion set out to focus on, you know, a smaller facility and ensuring that facility that we could get all of our licenses, because Health Canada and the licensing is really agnostic to scale. They're looking for proficiency and execution and SOPs around getting something done properly. So that we would produce 500 kilograms and maybe go to 1,000 or 5,000 was less relevant to Health Canada as it was that we actually ran, you know, a top-notch facility, that we were compliant, that we followed all the rules and regulations, that we made it easy for them to trace, you know, our lots and our grows. And so that was the focus in the beginning, is to ensure that we were a very tight operation, that we could then grow and expand. And so that's been probably the last year, is thinking about how you grow and expand. And so if I jump over quickly the growing part of the business and talk about the distribution part, I think that was very important. You can say you had, you know, X amount of kilograms, but where were they going to go? Which provinces were you going to sell them into? You know, were you going to sell flower? Were you going to extract that to oil? Were you going to manufacture pills? You know, what's your plan for, you know, the new edibles and beverage regs? And I don't think that a lot of companies had a plan around that. And we had a very distinct plan around that from the beginning, to think about distribution, where our product was going to go, not only domestically, but internationally as well. And it's been a big focus on us for over a year with European partners in the EU to give us the ability to expand into those markets as well. I'm actually on a plane this afternoon to Frankfurt. I'll be working with our partners in Germany and in Poland. We have financial presentations as we're listed on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange next week. So Europe is a big focus for us. And I think that at our size, that's probably another thing that makes us unique as well as Experion, is just thinking about what happens when we grow up as a company and what are the partners we're going to need? What are the markets that we're going to need to have accessible? And how are we actually going to move our products to those markets? Very few people think about how hard it is to become a GDP compliant facility, GMP compliant facility. You know, there's really, of those 170 licenses out there, there's only 8 of them currently licensed to actually export to the EU right now. And, you know, Germany is talking about having to support export with white paper, and Experion is the only company out there right now that's working with Health Canada on phase 2 and phase 3 clinical trials for postoperative pain management with cannabis. So I think Experion is really thinking about where this market is going, and we're building a team around execution that can scale. So if we have 1,000 or 5,000 or 10,000 or whatever the amount of kilograms, that really shouldn't matter on going into our plan. But if you were first only building a 600,000 square foot greenhouse without having any idea what products you were manufacturing or where they were going to go, I think, you know, that really creates a stuck point in the market for a lot of companies, and possibly why, you know, the valuations have come off a lot in our sector. I think the tide has gone out in all, for all companies, but that doesn't mean that, you know, it won't come back in for the right companies that have a plan.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes. You can do it through Google Play. You can do it through all the places. Equity Guru podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
You made a lot of great points there, Jay. I mean, I could probably count on one hand the number of cannabis companies which have managed just to hold steady since March of this year. Everybody seems to be hurting a little bit. Speaking of what I wanted to touch on, a lot to unpack there, but what I think I want to touch on first is the slump. We're in a bit of a slump right now. And in the letter, you talk in not so many words, but you mention what is, I could be extrapolating as, you know, anti-fragility. It's important to be diversified. It's important to be able to be in a place of strength if this continues. You know, we are seeing valuations getting sapped, but you're in a great position right now. Very low debt, good cash position. I wanted to ask you, what is the, not the importance of being anti-fragile, but, you know, how does a company in the cannabis space become protected in a situation like this?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that if you had that, you'd probably be a billionaire 10 times over in every sector. But, you know, what I do know, Ethan, is that, you know, the index, 90% of the index's companies are at their 52-week low right now. So that means a lot of money has gone out of the sector. And whether it was the right money or the wrong money can be debated, but it just means the valuations aren't there. You know, I saw presumptively that this was coming. You know, we are in a situation where we have no debt. We do have cash in the bank. And I think more importantly, we have a plan with what we're doing with our products. And I think that that's rather unique in the marketplace right now. And I think it's going to do a couple of things for us. It's going to give us time to execute our plan and patience from our shareholders, because we're not constantly going back and being dilutive and raising more money. But it's also, with some cash in the bank, it's going to give us opportunities, or, you know, at least the look at opportunities, because we do have cash in the bank and other people are struggling, and maybe to pick up certain assets or certain opportunities for considerably less than, you know, the cost that they were invested into. And that's by design. That's something we've been focused on since the beginning when I started, which, you know, I started October 15th, which was 2 days before legalization. We wanted to make sure right away that, you know, we had the ability to execute on this plan. Any good plan, you know, it never happened overnight. It's, you know, it's quarters in the making. And so, you know, a lot of the news releases that you read about us or will read about us this month really were put into motion, you know, earlier this year, and have been narrowed down against other opportunities. We have a couple acquisition opportunities, and, you know, I've probably seen 50, and Ethan, I've probably done due diligence on 10, and that allows you to really find the right team and people and culture and opportunity for maybe one or two. So it does take time. You know, you don't just turn over a rock and find a great investment opportunity. And you need to make sure that when you bring in, you know, an acquisition or do some sort of a partnership, even, that, you know, the culture's fit, so that you don't lose any of the momentum internally that you already have moving forward. That, you know, you dovetail the same and bolt it on to make sure that, you know, 1 + 1 = 3, not 1 + 1 is, you know, a negative half. And you've seen a lot of that in this industry, as well as, you know, money was free flowing, opportunities were abundant, and, you know, nobody really thought about how to actually bring those things together. And so, unfortunately, probably a lot of great companies, projects, ideas have died just, you know, on the desk of someone who just doesn't really have the time to be able to bring it to life.
Absolutely. How to be anti-fragile. It's a $1 billion question. I wouldn't want to, you know, you could write a book on that and make some money. I wouldn't steal it from you here. But you're absolutely right. Growth through M&A really has been the name of the game for a long time. And it's kind of fizzled out in recent months. I wanted to ask you, before we get into recent developments, I know you have Yesterday, there was a great news release that came out as far as expansion. I do want to ask you, you touched on it recently about M&A again. What I'm hearing from other executives in the space is that if this downturn continues and, valuations keep dropping and dropping, it's a buying opportunity. And from forecasters I've spoken to said there'll be about six big guys and 12 craft players in the short term. Do you agree with both of those assessments?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. And I think you can look to something as big and as old as the beverage industry. You have four big players in Coke, Pepsi, Cadbury, Schweppes, and Nestle. So do they control everything? Seems like it. Is there room for other companies to grow up and be bought by those companies? There definitely seems to be. So, I'm not sure. I think that's an overly simplistic statement. And I also think that it's a bit of a theoretical statement. And what I mean by that is if you run the math around population, uptake, product available, this is how many you need. So you really only need six. But, that assumes a whole bunch of other things, like those six companies are operating effectively, that they're delivering the products to the market that the consumers are looking for, that, they're fulfilling, all their distribution commitments, that they're in compliance with Health Canada. We've seen some big guys get rocked recently that we thought were untouchable. So I think we just have to be careful with theoretical statements like that. I get what they're saying. I think there will be less than there is today, but I think it'll be more than that statement.
Hey, fair enough. I would like to ask you, going back to that release we mentioned about spreading out into Quebec with Canabe, would you be able to tell us a little bit about that and the importance it has for Experian?
Sure. So Canabe is our line of, basically everything that's going to fall under Canabe will be microdosed. And so it's more on the therapeutic side of the market versus adult rec or medical. Canabe is focused primarily, or the first launch will be around pills. So a microdose pill that you'll be able to take. So it's exciting for us because it's our first processed cannabis product that we'll be selling domestically to a provincial partner. It really kind of confirms for me what I'm talking about, that developing markets like Quebec and the products that we're offering them are in alignment. We're only three other LPs actually sell capsules into Quebec at the moment. And, we're in there with the likes of Aurora, Canopy, Medrelief. So we're there with the big guys. And so what it really says is that we may not be at their scale, but we have mimicked or have a plan in parallel to what a lot of the large companies are doing to provide the solutions to the customer. And ultimately, whether you're a buyer for the BC government, Saskatchewan government, or Quebec government, as our partner, ultimately the consumer buying stuff at the counter is what's going to drive what they buy from the LPs. And that's the important thing for us. So it was important for us with Quebec to ensure that, our dedication to our pill line, which was born out of our clinical trial work, actually had a consumer application that we believed, and Quebec does believe that, and we actually have interest from other provinces as well, but not a lot of the provinces are at the maturity level, I think, of Quebec and Ontario just on size, but also, I would say Alberta, Saskatchewan just on, it's a little bit more of an open market there, and they're letting the consumer and the market decide, and I think BC lags that a little bit. I think the stat was that we have the same amount of stores in Alberta as they do in Prince Edward Island as a province. So, obviously we've got some catching up to do here in BC, but that's going to be time. And I know you've seen a lot of valuation discussion and a lot of companies blaming the rollout of the governments for, not opening as fast as they expected. And, our product has nowhere to go. That's kind of like saying, I made a whole bunch of beer or Coke or, beverage, and I'm mad because, nobody put all the vending machines out there to sell it. I think you need to have a supply and demand concept with your business, and I think you need to manage it accordingly. And, so that gets us into a lot of different aspects in our business for sure. And we could be considered a bit wide with some of the strategies that we have. But being strategically dynamic allows you to be there and ready for when the market says they're ready. So when Quebec says, hey, I'm doing a general tender and I need pills, nobody in our size or realm, in the LP size of the business is there. You know, when you look at, you know, Canopy and Aurora and MedReleaf, you know, it's a different stratosphere where they are in market cap and in size and maturity in the market. So to say experience, you know, there with, you know, the number four with that group really just says that we had a strategy to be there and be ready and be waiting in the wings for when the consumer was ready, but have a belief that the consumer will decide what these products are. So, you know, whether that's now edibles, whether that's beverages, you know, we have strategies around all of those things, but, you know, I don't have a bunch of beverages sitting in my facility or a bunch of gummies. You know, we have formulations and we have plans and we have partners, but, you know, we need to make sure that the market is ready to receive the products.
They say you're judged by the quality of your enemies, or I guess in this case, competitors. And in that case, it definitely bodes well. Jay Garnett, in closing, my pitch to investors would be cash position, no debt, measured growth, intelligent management that knows how to grow businesses and prior experience. What have I forgotten?
I don't know, Ethan. Sounds like you're on my team with that statement. So I appreciate the conversation. I think our team has done a lot of work. We're proud of what we do. We have a great shareholder base that's very supportive of what we're doing. And, you know, we would love to welcome more people into that shareholder base. I do see us being a viable company, whether it's going to be 6 or 60 in the future. I believe you'll see Experian on that list.
I think so too. Jay Garnett, CEO of Experian Biotech. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you, Ethan.
That concludes another episode of Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.